From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of December 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news in Washington, the House has passed a new child nutrition bill. A trade minister from South Korea says most of the issues blocking a three-year-old free trade deal with the U.S. have been solved. And the Labor Department has raised the unemployment rate in the United States. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll tell you how no-till began right here in the great state of Illinois on the U of I's Southern Illinois Research Farm at Dixon Springs. And as we close out the half hour, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with state climatologist Jim Angel. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up on this Friday afternoon. Futures from the wheat pit in Chicago nearby July up 11 and 3 quarters. That's at 786 and 3 quarters. December at 738. That's actually the nearby up 31 and a half. That July, of course, was the harvest month. December corn futures at $5.59, up 18 and a quarter. The March at 573 and a half, up 18. May corn at $5.80 and a half, up 17. And July at 584 and a half, up 16. Next year's December, 534 and a half, up 11 and a half. January beans, $13 and a quarter, up 20 and a half. The March at $13.07, up 19 and a quarter. May beans at $13.08 and a quarter, up 19. July at $13.10 and one half, up 19 and a quarter. And November soybeans at $12.08 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter. December bean meal at $3.50.10, up $6. December soybean oil at $53.08, up 61 cents. Mercantile exchange, live cattle, $103.17.5, up a dime for the day. January futures there are unchanged in the feeder cattle at $118.67.5. The March contract, though, up a nickel at $119.47.5. December lean hog futures at $69.27.5 today. Finished the day up 35 cents. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll post our Commodity Week program there by about 6 o'clock this evening. It's all at willag.org. Our guest this week, Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures at $89.23, up $1.23 on the afternoon. Ethanol trading at $2.05 and a tenth of a cent, down 2 4/10 in the nearby December, but the January up 3 2/10 at $2.10 and a tenth. The natural gas at $4.32 and 8 cents, a penny and a half lower. January heating oil or diesel fuel down up 3 1/2 cents at $2.489. at $2.48 and 9 tenths, up 3 and a half tenths. And the gold futures for the day at $1,405.40, up $16.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,347, just about 15 points lower at this hour. And the U.S. dollar currently trading at 79.37 is down 0.92. The CRB index at 316.16. is 4 points higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region, actually for Urbana-Champaign, as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say skies this afternoon should be mostly cloudy. A high near 33 degrees, light winds this afternoon. Tonight, snow, likely, mainly after midnight, cloudy, a low of 26. East-southeast winds between 5 and 9, and chance of precip this evening is 70%. New snow accumulation of less than 1 inch is possible. Saturday snow will continue. It'll be cloudy near 34 degrees. North-northwest winds between 8 and 11. Gusting to 16 miles an hour. The chance of precip here in the Urbana-Champaign area tomorrow is 70%, with new snow accumulation of less than 1 inch possible. And Saturday night, mostly cloudy. A low of 20 degrees. North-northwest winds between 11 and 13. They'll gust all the way to 16 miles an hour. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast and what our snow might look like over the weekend when we talk with state climatologist Jim Angel at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, is on the phone line with us today. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having me, Todd. It's always great to be with you guys.
It's more fun when the markets are up, I suppose, as opposed to when they're down.
Especially at Christmas time.
Yeah, especially at Christmas time. It was quite a move that happened in the wheat pit. Why don't you start there and work your way towards the grains?
Well, you know, we started talking about this several weeks back, and if we fast forward to this week, I think really the catalyst to the wheat market move, and I think March wheat ended up around 91, 92 cents for the week. I think the major catalyst was that those macro fundamentals, the North-South Korean issue, the European Union debt issue, the Chinese stock market issues, those all stabilized. And at the same time, we got some better information out of Australia as far as how bad exactly this crop is looking in terms of the eastern Australian crop. And we're looking at up to 5 weeks behind on harvest in that area. We're looking at another 2 inches of rains expected next Wednesday in that area, with 60% in the field still by most reports or most accounts I've seen. We're looking at possibly 7.5 million tons of wheat moving from milling quality down to feed wheat quality. And at the same time we heard all this, we started to see the prices around Europe and around the Middle East and even in Western Australia start to move up quite dramatically, and Egypt kept buying. And I think that was the major trigger to the trade saying, hey, something's up here. Western Australia wheat has gotten to an equivalent of about $9 a bushel. So that's really the quick and dirty on the wheat rally we've seen here this week.
So if we go back and we take a look at what really has happened with wheat over the past 6 or 7 months, the rally in the grains and oilseeds started with the wheat in August, and the winter wheat growing regions of Ukraine and Russia, they had a problem. They shut the export market off at that point. There was some talk at one point that they might open up at the beginning of the new year, where that's upon us. I suppose that complicates matters. Have we got any decision as to where, if and when they might open that export market back up?
The best indication we have is from a release from Sovicon just yesterday. They put the winter wheat estimate at 33 million versus 28.2 last year, and an 09 winter wheat crop of just under 39 million metric tons. They said an extension of an export ban is probably seen as highly probable, and that's coming from the president and CEO of Sovicon, which is has been a fairly decent agricultural analytical firm this year, you know, somewhat, I would even say, very reliable in terms of giving us good information and being ahead of the curve this year in terms of what happened in the Ukraine and the Soviet Union. So right now it seems highly probable that export ban will continue.
So we have an export ban out of a primary supplier to the Middle East. Thus, Egypt has been in the market, I suppose.
Right.
And the other place that Egypt normally, I think, would have gotten their wheat supplies would have been Australia, right?
Exactly right. And I think that the other thing goes back to, Todd, I think that probably some of the commercials early in this week were relying upon the Australian crop. And I had heard rumors in Chicago by some of the contacts up there that some of the commercials had gotten caught short. In other words, they had wheat booked and purchased on the board. Booked in terms of the shipping side, and they were waiting on the Australian crop to come on board. But with it being so delayed in eastern Australia, they had to resort to buying the board to cover themselves for what they may not be able to get. So I think that's where the cash rubber hit the road finally this week in the global wheat market. And I think at the end of the week, we finally saw that instead of the corn not wanting to play because of the ethanol blender's credit and because of the wheat-corn spread being so discount to the wheat, we finally saw, I think, a turn back into the trade's mindset that we have a global feed grain issue. And we saw that in the oats rallying today, first day in a while that we've seen the oats come around. The rice had a really good rally as well. So when I saw all those markets rallying sharply, I think that that probably indicated we're back to worrying about global feed grain supplies ahead of this next week's USDA report because of this catalyst being Australia and their weather.
Okay, I'll come back to the feed supplies in just a moment. Can we try to move this discussion, and I've led it across the globe, but can we move it back to Chicago?
You bet.
And talk about the soft red winter wheat, which in the nearby the harvest month, July, touched $8 today.
Right.
And then you've got the December and the March and the May of 11 and 12, all above $8 at this point.
That's right. I think two things happened in wheat today. One, we saw some profit-taking of Kansas City, Chicago wheat spreaders that had been buying Kansas City, selling Chicago. We saw the reverse of that. The other thing that happened that I'm pretty encouraged about is we saw the March wheat and the Dease wheat, which is now in delivery, gain on the new crop July by over almost 20 cents in the March and just right at 20 cents against the Dease. And so what that suggests to me is if that trend continues next week, which I think it will if the weather stays wet in eastern Australia, that we will probably go to an inverted market again in the wheat where the front end takes over leadership to the back end, new crop July. And that's not a bearish indication. That says the cash is tight and elevators and commercials around the world are bidding up for the front end because they need the product right away. So if we see that inversion occur in the March, July, I think that adds fuel to the fire of more upside.
Does that mean you're not a willing seller of new crop wheat yet?
That's exactly right. I think that it's just way, way too premature to go ahead and do that. The only thing I would be looking at is the option volatility, implied volatility, is very, very high in all the commodities, all the grains right now. I would be looking, as we got above the 825 level in July futures, if we could get a little bit of a pullback in the implied volatility, I might be looking at getting some puts bought, especially ahead of the USDA report. So if we rally sharply the first half of the week next week, and we don't have an out-of-control implied volatility market, I may be looking at buying some puts for clients for new crop.
And then turn your attention to the other grains, new oil seeds, the corn and the soybeans. Futures in the December contract at 559, March in the corn at 573.5, the May at $5.80.5, enough to make you let any more go?
No, not right now. I think with the wheat in control here, I'm going to let it fly. We also made a new contract high in the December S&P 500. The dollar looks like it's made a top to me for the next 30 to 45 days. So unless I would get something very bearish on the USDA report next Friday, or we would be able to move up another 30 to 40 cents in the corn before the USDA report, I think I'm going to hold pat on any more sales in the corn and keep the re-ownership in place going into the report.
Soybeans touched $13 in January.
Yes, and export commitments and accumulated exports continue to run 20% ahead of last year. I think that's really what underpinned the beans this week. When we got a wetter Brazilian forecast and the trade tried to go lower yesterday, it just kind of failed, and I think it was because of the export sales and the really good export pace we keep up. The Argentine weather turning drier, and the turnaround in the soy meal especially is a very welcome thing to see. I think this January bean close above $13 opens the technicians up to another 35 to 40 cents up here, and maybe as much as back up towards that $14 level, depending on if whether USDA lowers that carryover. Some of the people in Chicago are telling me they're thinking more of a 150 carryover for Friday's report next week. That would be 35 million less than November's number.
Explain your bean meal comment there.
Well, I never really like it whenever bean oil moves the market. And what we saw this week was a 28-month high in palm oil, the vegetable oil market we talked about on Commodity Week last week. And you know, we saw this vegetable oil market really take off this week. And unfortunately, the meal was the short side of the spread. So hopefully we've worked that into the market. The spread traders are done. And if the beans and the oil want to go up now, the meal will go with it, because a meal-led rally or a meal-supported rally tends to be a lot more reliable. If you look at the major highs of the last 10 to 13 years in soybeans, you had to have the meal on board going up with you, and it wasn't usually an oil-led rally that got us to historically high prices.
You turned around then. Our livestock producers, do they need to do anything?
I think the cattle are running a little hot right now, both technically and from a standpoint of how much fund length we have. I'm going to be eager to see the commitment of traders report, so I'd be looking at hedging some fat cattle next week and some feeders possibly as well. Hogs, I'm going to take the sidelines. We had a nice close on the hogs, and the funds did come in and buy, and with this weaker dollar, If the cash market can come in good next week, I think the hogs have a move to the upside to them in the next five, six sessions.
Did we get it all?
I think we did.
All right, thank you. Oh, you know what we didn't get was the dollar.
The dollar, again, I think it's probably made a high of around that 81.50 level. So that's kind of a Custer line for the dollar for me. We do not want to see a Dees dollar or March dollar index move back above 81.50 on a closing basis. That would probably signal a substantial break in commodities coming.
All right, all up, all done. Thank you.
Okay, sir.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look at today's agricultural newscast.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, the U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday passed a $4.5 billion child nutrition bill that expands a program that provides full meals after school to all 50 states and that also tries to cut down on greasy foods and extra calories by giving the government power to decide what kinds of foods may be sold in vending machines and lunch lines. The bill would increase eligibility for school lunches, expand summer feeding programs, and provide money to serve more than 20 million additional after-school meals annually. The new nutritional standards would be written by the Agriculture Department. Republicans attempted to send the bill back to the Senate on Wednesday instead of straight to the president, by using a procedural maneuver to try to amend it with language that would require background checks for child care workers. South Korea Trade Minister Kim Jong-un today says that the U.S. and South Korea have resolved most major issues blocking approval of a free trade deal that had been stalled for 3 years. Kim says, quote, "We come to kind of a great deal of progress, and everything, of course, is at the referendum basis," Kim said, meaning it would have to be reviewed by the two governments. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk had no immediate comment on the talks. The two countries signed a bilateral free trade agreement on June 30th of 2007, but it has been stuck in Congress because of opposition from the U.S. auto industry. South Korean barriers to U.S. beef has also delayed action. The Labor Department today says the nation's unemployment rate climbed from 9.6 to 9.8% in November, a seven-month high as hiring slowed. Employers added only 39,000 jobs last month, a sharp decline from the 172,000 created in October. The weakness was widespread. Retailers, factories, construction companies, financial firms, and the government all cut jobs last month. The jobless rate has now topped 9% for 19 straight months, the longest stretch on record. The EPA's top regulator today says that the Obama administration is preparing to defend its greenhouse gas policies after Republicans take control of the U.S. House of Representatives next year. Gina McCarthy, EPA's Assistant Administrator for Air Policy, says, quote, "There is no question that we will be under increased scrutiny or continued scrutiny." And a coalition of ethanol supporters announced yesterday a major partnership with NASCAR. NASCAR will start using Sunoco Green E15, which is made from corn, in 2011. The partnership kicks off at NASCAR's biggest annual race, the Daytona 500, next February. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, that second program. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon and post to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest, Roy Huckabee. He's with the Lynn Group in Chicago, Illinois. I also hosted the beginning of the Ag Masters program, which continues today on this campus. and will emcee the FarmDoc Ag Summit meetings coming up the third week of December and the Corn and Soybean Classic Series in the first and second week of January. Look up those and sign up. Pre-registration is now open for both of those programs. That's the FarmDoc Series of meetings the third week of December, the Corn and Soybean Classic Series the first and second weeks of January. Now, coming up next, you know, Dixon Springs is beautiful American country. It's also the birthplace of the modern no-till era for agriculture. I'll have more on this Southern Illinois development. It was here in deep Southern Illinois, close to the Shawnee National Forest and the furthest north Cypress Swamp in the United States, that the modern era of farming was challenged and changed. The lands roll, and when it rains, wash away into the Ohio and Mississippi rivers by the ton. Or at least they did, until a University of Illinois agronomist decided there had to be a better way to grow crops on the hillsides. For 37 years, George McKibben experimented and evangelized what was to become the modern era of no-till farming. Illinois agronomist Steve Ebelhair explains the effects of the research can be seen throughout the Southern Illinois landscape.
Oh, absolutely, because back in the 30s and 40s, when the area was still under conventional tillage system, we saw a lot of really gully erosion, a lot of water coming off the fields just saturated with soil, just dark soil moving off the profiles, off the landscapes. And now when you see a rain, you know, it's mostly clearer water, not a lot of soil movement because the residues are helping hold the soil in place. So we don't see the gullies that we once saw under conventional till system where the water has moved tremendous amounts of soil off the profiles.
What really made George McKibben's no-till experiments at Dixon Springs work as a soil-saving tool is pretty simple. And there's a reason it took so long for farmers to adopt the practice, meaning reasons it wasn't thought of or worked on prior to the 1960s. The technology to control weeds hadn't been developed and adapted to the farm before that time. The herbicides allowed McKibben's no-till experiments to work, says Ebelhair.
It's really the merger of good weed control herbicides coming into the market and the pioneering efforts of George McKibben that really made no-till take off in the early 60s into the 70s.
And then in the mid-1990s, when the herbicide-resistant varieties of soybeans were introduced, no-till really began to boom. The crop had been modified to withstand being sprayed with a herbicide, and no-till acres around the nation and in Illinois jumped. The first time no-till soybean acres outnumbered any other tillage method in the state of Illinois came in 2007, 41 years after George McKibben planted his first no-till experiment at Dixon Springs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. In just 2 minutes, I'll return when we'll talk with Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Ice Cream Box Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1838, Cleveland Abbey was born. A U.S. astronomer and meteorologist, he is considered the father of the U.S. Weather Bureau. The Weather Service was authorized by Congress on February 9, 1870, and Abbey joined the following January, bringing skills as the only person in the country with experience drawing weather maps from telegraphic reports and forecasting from them. In 1842, Ellen Swallow Richards was born. An American chemist, she was one of the founders of the home economics movement in the U.S. In 1910, George Claude first demonstrated his new invention, the neon light, at the Paris Motor Show. And in 1984, the world's worst industrial disaster occurred in Bhopal, India. Over 40 tons of poisonous gas leaked out of a Union Carbide pesticide factory. About 3,800 were killed, and over 300,000 people suffered acute respiratory problems, burning eyes and vomiting. An independent investigation showed a strong possibility of employee sabotage as a cause of the disaster, although it has never been proved. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, located right here in Urbana-Champaign, now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hey, I was out yesterday at the Ag Masters program and watched you make a presentation on climate and how it's changed. It was really, really good. Glad to have you along for that. And you and Don Wobbles did a really nice job of looking back and looking forward at climate.
Well, thank you.
So can you summarize what the two of you said?
Yeah, I think while we talk about global climate change and so forth, that here in Illinois, we really haven't seen the kind of changes they've seen elsewhere. We've been a little bit on the lucky side in that we haven't seen some of the extremes in the temperatures that we've seen elsewhere. But I would say, in general, we've been a little bit warmer and certainly wetter over the last couple of decades than in historical times. So I think that's one trend we see. Also, it's been a little more humid, especially in the summertime there. The humidity levels have climbed. As we discussed in the conference, part of that may be due to the agricultural activity we've got going on across the Midwest.
Indeed. So let's talk about activity across the Midwest now, because humidity is not high, but there's going to be snow, I suppose, and it's going to be really cold pretty soon.
That's right. Yeah, I think winter has arrived here. We've got a big system across the upper plains and moving into the Great Lakes region. It's going to drop some snow in our area. Northern Illinois probably will see about 4 or more inches out of it. If you get closer to Champaign-Urbana, it's more like 1 to 3, and south of Champaign, it's about an inch. So it's probably about the first, I'd say really the first significant snowfall we've had this season for the northern half of the state. And behind that, it's, like you said, it's going to be some very cold temperatures, I think. The 7-day forecast, for example, for Champaign-Urbana, has the lows dropping down into the lower teens by Sunday and Monday nights, and I think up in the Chicago area maybe a little colder than that. So it's our first bout of really cold weather as well.
I think I heard one of our analysts tell us that there might be some single-digit numbers out there in the not-too-distant future, too. Is that right?
That's right. I think probably early next week we could certainly see them. The 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day all show us a large area of below-normal temperatures. So that is certainly a possibility.
And how unusual is it at this time of year to get that cold?
Well, it's not necessarily record-breaking, but it is pretty unusual. That's when you're saying single digits, now you're looking about 20 degrees below our normal low temperatures for this time of year. So it's pretty extraordinary.
Jim, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website for Commodity Week. We'll produce that at 4:30 and post it at about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest, Roy Huckabee. Commodity Week at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Mike Carey and Morris at 815-941-2189. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.